The recording has started.
Great. Thank you so much, Robert. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanisms Subteam for Data Call on the 16th of February, 2018 at 1700 UTC. On the call today, we do have Cynthia King, Susan Payne, Christine Durain, Kathy Kleiman, and Philip Corwin. We do have apologies from Rebecca Tushnet, J. Scott Evans, Lori Shulman, and Michael Graham, tentatively. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Ariel Liang, Barry Cobb, Antonia Tamagiacati, and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. As a reminder, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please utilize your mute button when not speaking. Thank you, and I'll turn the meeting back over to Julie Headland.
Thanks so much, Michelle, and this is Julie Headland from staff, and thank you all for joining today. So we had hoped to proceed with Section 4, the registrant section, that is Kurt's section. Kurt is in Australia. We don't have apologies from him, but he's not on this call. So we'd like to get a sense of how you might like to proceed today. You know, if someone else wanted to step back into Kurt's section and lead us through a discussion there, that's one possible alternative. We do also have on the schedule, on the agenda, to discuss the timing of future meetings and also the activities at ICANN, 60, deciding whether or not we want to meet in 61 and if so, how we might do that. So I'd just like to, first of all, just open it up to all of you to see what you would like us to do today. Christine, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is, let me move my mic here so you can hear me. This is Christine for the transcript. I know we worked on Rebecca's section last week, and then she's made some changes, and then I sort of lost track of where we left off with Kurt's section. Does anybody remember sort of where we even left off with Kurt's section?
So this is Julie from staff. So we left off in the Google Doc. It would be starting, let's see, we've got page. Let me ask Ariel. Ariel's typing, actually. She's confirming. Page 28 and onward. And so I'm not sure what that translates into in the PDF, but if you look at the Google Doc, you can see where we were at. So, I mean, we certainly would have the option to, you know, begin discussing from that section on today's call if people would like, even in the absence of Kurt. So we just, it might be helpful to have.
Thanks. Can I ask a follow-up?
Yes, please go ahead, Christine.
So I'm actually looking at the, my apologies. I'm actually looking at the Google Doc and not the screen, and maybe that's my problem, but I don't see page numbers on the Google Doc. So do we, when we talk about page 28, are you talking about the actual PDF then?
Ariel Lang says that on the Google Doc, the page numbers are in the bottom right corner, but let me just.
All right. Well, somebody
let me look too. I don't have that.
I'm sure it's operator error.
not necessarily. Let me look as well, and because I do think I had seen page numbers, but okay, here it's come up. Yes, the page numbers do show up in the bottom right corner. For me, anyway. And Ariel has her hand up. Go ahead, Ariel.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. So we're looking at the section with the scope titled Obtain Feedback on Number of Cease and Desist Letters Received, Claims Charter, question number 3. So that's where we left off. And then we were talking about the data-related questions in column 4.
Thanks, Ariel. So then, and I see that we have, Susan is also trying to get in the Google Doc. Yeah, I did. I found that it was a little slow as well, Susan, when I went into it just now. So if folks would like to get to that spot, then we can decide. And Debbie Cactus, page 27. Thank you very much, Ariel. I was just getting to that. There it is. Yep. So we have that section up on the PDF. And so what would folks like to do? And I guess, and here we have a couple of hands up, Kathy and Christine, or vice versa.
Okay, this is Christine. I just had a really quick question. Where we left off with Kurt, I thought he was going to be making some updates. Do you know if what we're looking at in the Google Doc included updates, or did he not get those in? Because the last email that I saw, and I haven't checked since yesterday, said that he hadn't made the updates before he got.
He did not make the updates. Ariel is confirming that. Kathy.
This is Kathy. Did something do? First, can you hear me? Sometimes I have good phone connection. Sometimes I don't.
You were a little choppy there. It seems a little better now, but you were breaking up. Can you try again?
Okay. Please let me know if I continue to break up. It looks like someone has put in edits that tie together sections 4 and 5. So the survey of domain name registrants and the survey of potential domain name registrants, and that kind of funky area in between that is a survey of someone who tried to register and may not have gone through. So someone took the discussion from last week, I'm assuming it was Rebecca, but I'm not sure, and kind of wove it all together. So it seems like sections 4 and 5 now flow through, but that was just my quick read of it. I thought I'd check and see if anyone else had the same thought.
Thanks, Kathy. And Ariel, do you, can you confirm whether or not Rebecca had made those changes?
This is Ariel. Rebecca did make some changes on page 27 on the Google Doc. She did add 2 questions there. I think that was in the hope to tie section 4 and 5 together. And then Rebecca did a lot of updates on section number 5. So, yeah, that if there's any update, that's from Rebecca.
Thank you, Ariel. Kathy, does that answer your question?
Can you help me? Yes, it does. Thank you. Thank you, Ariel. Andrew.
Thank you. Christine?
Thank you, Christine, for the transcript. So I'm looking a little bit at where we left off with Kurt's section, and because I unfortunately did not take great notes about what changes Kurt was going to be putting in there, I feel like any work that we might do on his section would just either be duplicative or go a different direction or really not be useful. So I propose for group discussion that we look at the information that Rebecca just inserted. Now, I know she's not on the call, but we all just discussed it last week. She did say she was going to make some changes, and that includes 27 and whatever else other changes she made in her section. And so at least it's refreshed, and she had the opportunity to put in the changes she said she was going to make. We can be very gentle about, you know, any edits we'd like to make to it to be respectful of her work there. But I think that we could use our time to address the things that actually did have that Rebecca did actually spend the time to update for us. Thoughts?
Thank you. Thank you, Christine. Kathy?
Put your hand down.
We can hear you. Yes. Go ahead. No? Okay. Hand down. Thank you. Does anybody have any thoughts on Christine's proposal that we start with the changes that Rebecca made following last week's call? I see some folks are typing. Cynthia says, sounds good. Susan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to type and I thought this would be quicker. I was just going to say I think that probably would help because I have to say I'm looking at Kurt's section and I'm completely lost as to where language has come from and who's inserted it, whereas hopefully if we look at Rebecca's section, it may make more sense to us.
Thank you, Susan. And Christine says yes. Can't make heads or tails of the Google Doc. So it sounds like we have a good proposal here. Would anybody like to lead the discussion? I think I've tried to pull up that page in the Adobe Connect, and you can go to that page there. And Kathy's saying, I'm using the PDF that Ariel shared before the call. Seems to have both edits and highlights. And Ariel's typing. So we should start then. Please, go ahead, Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. Without taking any ownership of this section, I'm happy to just share it for no other purpose than somebody should volunteer, if no one objects.
Thank you, Christine. I don't see any objections, and your volunteering is most welcome, and I'm seeing hand clapping from Susan. And Cynthia says...
Okay, great. This is Christine. Great. This is Christine for the transcript. Will you either unlock it or go to the next page, please? This was the first change, I think you said. Okay, perfect. So it looks like Rebecca made changes as promised to the first section. She had a big intro section that kind of, you know, gave a heads up. I wasn't sure last week if this intro section was mostly for the survey provider or if it was really something that she thought was going to go to the registrants. But either way, it's a suggestion and the survey provider can decide if that's useful or not. And so let's look at her note here, keeping in mind that I'm not entirely sure if the note is designed for survey providers or for respondents. The new note says, note, there are three potential paths for respondents. Respondents may fall into more than one group and should be asked the relevant questions for each group. One, actual new GTLD registrants, see previous section. Two, people who attempted new GTLD registration but did not complete the process. Or three, people who would consider registering a new GTLD in the future, but who are calling, quote, likely consumers, end quote. Thus, someone who tried multiple domain names in the new GTLDs before successfully registering one or more should be asked both about their unsuccessful attempts and their understanding as registrants, whether or not they received a notice. Any thoughts or questions related to that? I think this is meant to be, it looks like now that I've read it closely, it looks to me like this is really meant to be a note to the survey provider, some direction giving them like how to present the instructions to the different registrants. I don't see any problem with this language. I think it's helpful and clear. Does anybody think that we need to add anything or if anything is a problem, you know, to go to the survey provider? Pausing for hands in case there's a problem. Cynthia agrees. Susan says it looks okay. All right. Let's take the other attack really quick. What if this is going to registrants? I don't think it is, but what if it is? Did we see anything wrong with sort of this information or some variation of it being sent to registrants? I don't think it would be a problem. I think it might be confusing, but I don't see anything problematic. So seeing nobody else jumping in on that, I think we can call that done. Next, I'm going to try to scroll down without going way past it. Okay. Next section. Now we're working on fine. Susan agrees that it's fine, but definitely seems more relevant to the provider. Great. So the question we're really talking about is we want to learn a little bit more about abandonment, but specifically we're learning about, is the trademark claim service having any unintended consequences, such as deterring good faith domain name applications? And so that question, we start digging into this, have you ever registered a domain name? I'm on the data column, so the far fourth column. Do you plan on registering a domain name in the next year? Would you consider one of the new domains? Have you attempted to register a domain name in one of the new domains? So these, it sounds like these are sort of the background yes or no questions that we're asking to get started and sort of figure out what track the registrant is on. Do we see any problems with these? It looks like the only change is the last one. Have you attempted to register a domain name in one of these new domains? Have you ever registered? Okay, so it looks to me like she's just covering her bases here. And then she has an instruction, if no to both, terminate the survey. I thought we had decided that we were not going to instruct the provider to terminate the survey, only because there may be follow-up questions, there may be other sort of, you know, questions that are not related to, I think even she last week would, well, so that if you would consider, but even she last week was suggesting that she would love to put the survey in front of other people. So even if somebody wouldn't really want to register a domain name, a new domain name, but would want a .com, maybe we still want their opinion on the survey. So I don't know why she's asking to terminate here. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, it's Susan here. The only thing I would say is that obviously this is meant to be the survey for potential registrants, albeit, you know, that people might fall in more than one pot. But if they say no to all of these questions, you know, kind of they're not considering registering and they haven't registered in the past, they don't plan on registering and they wouldn't consider a new domain, they're kind of not a potential registrant.
Yeah, this is Christine. No, I think, okay, good. Yeah, I think you're right. Cynthia says my dad would be that guy. awesome. So my question is then for you, Susan, if you want to respond, is I believe that there was some discussion, and we may not have agreed on that, and maybe that's why we didn't go there, but there was some discussion, just trying to be fair to Rebecca, about putting the claims notice in front of as many people as possible. Sort of just any standard American, and if somebody's sort of getting a survey but says I would never register a domain name, might we still want them to glance at the claims notice? Do we care what they think? Or are they just going to be so disgruntled and confused and click and their opinion's going to be invalid? What do you think, Susan?
Well, no, I think we did have a conversation about that, and I was trying to find some notes as to where we came out on it. I'm not sure where we came out on it, but I suppose I'm thinking about Cynthia's dad and my dad. And if you put the claims notice in front of them, well, my dad anyway, he wouldn't have a clue what it was about. But then he doesn't know what a domain name is. So it just feels like you could potentially get a pot of people who, you know, couldn't be anything but confused because they have no idea what we're even talking about. And I think I can do my, you know, using my dad as the example, I mean, that works, you know, because he absolutely has no idea what a domain name is or, frankly, can't turn a computer on.
I love it. Christine again. Okay, so I think that we'll leave that language in. And you know what? We also are giving the survey provider latitude to sort of make different recommendations. So if they come back and say, well, no, we think we can, you know, maybe we ask other questions, certainly do that. But let's just invite them to consider terminating the survey and leave that language there. Good. All right, carrying on. All right, the next section's a bit long. Wording of this set of questions should be discussed with the surveyor. Oh, this looks like it might be a note. Okay. We would like to present the language of the notice to people in all relevant groups, 1 through 3. And, in fact, I think that should say 1 through 4, right? Because 1 through 4, have you ever registered? Do you plan on registering? What you consider? Okay. I see. So I think she's discounting the people who have registered. I think she's only talking about the do you plan on registering, would you consider, or have you attempted? Okay. We would like to present the language of the notice to people in all relevant groups. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, it's Susan. Sorry for butting in. I think she means 1 through 3 in the top notes, you know, in the bit at the beginning where we, the first note we went through. So she's got, you know, actual new GTLD registrants, and then 2 is people who attempted, and then 3 is people who would consider. I think that's what she means, I'm guessing.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. This is Christine. Yes, good. And then ask comprehension questions. So the question should be as neutral and non-leading as possible. This may involve beginning with explaining your own words and then asking more directed questions about perceptions of legal rights and risks, as well as what would you do next if you received the notice when you attempted to register, such as stop, continue, consult someone else, et cetera, and why. So let's stop there. That's the first bullet. So this looks more of an instruction to the provider to ask, to tell them what our goal is here. So our aim is to show the group of people the claims notice and then get them to talk about it, whether that's in your own words or whether that's radio buttons and click boxes. And that's where she gets to, I remember her proposal last week. It was very important to Rebecca that we gather information multiple different ways. So anybody have any problems with this section? The only question I'll ask on this is, you know, in other cases we've been a little more specific, and maybe Rebecca's done a better job at taking it up a notch and you know, pulling it back a bit. But I'm wondering if we've given enough direction here. Does everybody feel like the survey provider will have enough direction? I'm also assuming that, you know, the survey provider is smart enough to take this entire document collectively. By this time, the survey provider should have a pretty good understanding of what we're trying to learn. Susan says, yes, agreed, and I think this is what we talked about doing. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I hadn't scrolled down and realized that the sort of various versions of the questions that we had in the previous version of this document, sorry, that's lots of versions, I kind of assumed that they were sort of staying and that we were giving this explanation to the provider, but saying kind of like, here's the kind of questions we've been thinking about, but you will know better than us how best to ask them. I hadn't anticipated that we were just giving this explanation without also giving them the guidance that came from the proposed questions. Does that make sense? Not sure I made sense there. Let me keep going.
This is Christine for the transcript. I think you... Please go.
Sorry. Just in case I wasn't being clear, because in the previous version of the document we had, you know, if when registering your domain you received a notice with the following wording, would you believe you have won? A, legally allowed to continue, B, legally, you know, not legally allowed, et cetera, et cetera. And there were various different kind of versions of that language. And so I had kind of anticipated that the survey provider would get a note along the lines of the one that Rebecca has drafted, but also probably those examples of questions that we had previously as helping guide their consideration of how is the best way to ask this.
I think the answer may be in the third column. This is Kathy.
Kathy, could you explain? This is Christine.
Yeah. Because I agree with Susan, I was expecting that too, and I was kind of expecting to see it in the fourth column continuum. But now when I flip over to the third column, if we go back to the prior page 30, right under the instructions that you read, Christine, let me just read it because that way we can all absorb it. First, do I still sound like I'm underwater? Can you hear? Can you understand what I'm saying?
This is Christine. You're a little muffled, but much clearer than before.
Okay, good. Apologies. I can't switch phones at this point. So third column says show notice. Explain in your own words what you understand the notice to be. Ask more comprehension questions you may or may not have right. I'm not sure exactly what that means. And then it says separate survey inquiry. Oh, here it is, talking of IBM or the analysis group, data on past potential registrants who didn't. Actually, let me stop there. So I think in the third column, at the top of that third column for potential registrants, that may be the section that Susan was talking about, question mark, Susan, that we show them the notice and that the survey providers kind of lead them through what it might or might not mean to them, because these are people who have never seen it before. Does that answer your question, Susan? Is that what we were looking for? Thanks.
Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah. No, I don't think it does. It does remind me, thank you very much, it reminds me that we did have a conversation, and Rebecca, I know, was very keen to do kind of one version of show them the notice and just hear what they have to say, and one where there's a more sort of, you know, after that, a more sort of targeted asking them questions to understand their comprehension better. And so I think that's what that does, the combined language in column one and column three and column four. But in terms of that slightly more targeted questioning to really drill down on comprehension, I just had imagined that we would keep in the at least one version of the questions that we'd previously had in the document as a guidance for the survey provider, that this was the kind of thing we were thinking about. You know, you might think that there's a better way to ask this, but these are the kind of questions we were imagining you'd be asking.
Thanks, Susan. Kathy, you still have your hand up. Did you want to respond?
It's an old hand.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. This is Christine for the transcript. Yeah, I think I see what you're saying, Susan. For anyone who's just on the phone, basically there's the questions that were deleted, that Rebecca deleted in the Google Doc were, and I'll read just the questions and not the answers for brevity. If when you registered your you received a notice with the following wording, would you believe you were? And then there were questions like, were you legally allowed, not legally allowed? The second question, if when registering your domain you received a notice with the, hold on, I'm getting a pop up here. If you received a notice with the following wording, would you believe you would? And then she had some suggestions like get sued, not get sued, nobody would care, what's the problem? And then both times she asked for anecdotal information. And then the third question, what would you do if you received a notice with the following wording? Continue, not continue, et cetera. And that's when she put in her hypotheticals. I think that, and I'm going to take this from Susan's suggestion, I think there is some value in sort of converting all of that laundry list of questions and various answers. And she did summarize it a bit here and just sort of say, sort of, for instance, you might ask, you know, if you saw the notice. And she started with that. She says, what would you do if you received the notice, stop, continue, consult, and why? So one of the questions is there. I think that it would be helpful if we also brought in the other questions that Rebecca had initially asked too. Again, just for directive purposes, of course, the survey provider can word them as needed. That's my suggestion, I think, based off of Susan. Cynthia, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Cynthia. The way that I heard what both Kathy and Susan said is that they're kind of talking about two different things. Kathy is saying that when they do the survey, they're going to give a copy of a type of notice so that these folks understand what they're talking about, which I think is an excellent idea. And then these questions on the fourth column would be questions that we provide to the survey taker to say these are the kind of information that we're looking for, so that they can properly explain the notice to the respondent. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, great. This is Christine. So it sounds like we have some agreement on that. It sounds like we all think that the presenting of the claims notice, of course, is a good idea. We think that asking the follow-up questions is a fantastic idea. We like, so far it looks like we like what Rebecca wrote suggestion to the survey provider, but the one thing we would like to add are to go back and pull the other questions that Rebecca had deleted and very briefly summarize those in the note there, in that, that first bullet under if no, terminate the survey. Is that what I'm hearing? Cynthia says yes. Susan says yes. Kathy says yes. Okay, good. So I think maybe we can that might be just an easy ask for staff, since Rebecca's not on this call, to just sort of pull those last, those deleted questions in here, and we can make sure that Rebecca's fine with that. All right, moving swiftly on. Next bullet point, consider offering hypothetical. Famous maker of computers, horse, and scenario extremes such as horse.computers and horse.farm. If consumer attempting to register these received notice, what would they do? Okay, so this is where we spent, I think, the bulk of our time last week. I think we did not come to a consensus on whether or not we all, sort of thought the hypothetical was a good idea. I know that I'm in the not hypothetical camp. Others were in favor of the hypothetical. It looks like Rebecca attempted some compromise by removing brand names, so that's good. And thinking about sort of extreme scenarios like, you know, would it be okay to get horse.computers or horse.farm if the consumer is attempting to register these and they receive notice. So I have to admit this is where I followed a weakness, because I don't know that we have consensus on hypotheticals here, and I don't know how to proceed from here. I know that the full working group needs to decide. I don't know if we have a way to get to consensus on this here. I just would love some suggestions, maybe even from one of the chairs, about the best way to go forward. I mean, I don't think it's going to be helpful to spend 20 more minutes rehashing all of our same, sort of positions about why hypotheticals are or should not be, should or should not be permitted in the survey. So, Phil, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good job running the call, Christine. You know, on this, it seems to me what Rebecca's trying to get at in kind of a roundabout way is to find out among respondents what the level of general understanding of trademark law is. But I'm not against trying to find out among surveyed registrants, clearly a sophisticated domain investor versus someone who's just trying to register a domain would probably have a very different reaction to receiving a claims notice. But I'm not sure that offering hypotheticals is the best way to find out the general level of understanding of trademark law concepts of registrants who did receive or might receive notices. It might perhaps... they should just be asked in a more direct fashion. I don't have a particular example of a question in mind now, but a more direct inquiry about understanding of trademark law might be more useful than giving them hypotheticals and then trying to extrapolate from their answers to the hypotheticals what their understanding is. So I don't know if that's helpful, but those are my thoughts. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. I think extrapolation was one of the concerns I had as well. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, Kathy. And as you said, Christine, you probably don't need to rehash this. I think Rebecca did was kind of the middle ground. So we had been talking, her original materials had very specific and kind of well-known examples that have been debated in the ICANN world forever. So she was using Xerox and Apple and Chipotle. And, of course, questions were raised like, what is Chipotle? Because outside the U.S., that might not be known. But I think what she was trying to do was give some concrete examples, because that's what people work with. And in the Who Is review team, when we survey people on the Who Is, we actually put Who Is records. We had the survey providers actually go and help them find a Who Is records so they could actually see it, so it wasn't something abstract in their mind. So I seem to recall that the suggestion had been made to kind of neutralize these and actually take out real well-known trademarks and put in some hypotheticals, which is what Rebecca did. So I think she was trying to do the middle ground. And
I'd like to recommend we show that to the working group as well as, you know, ask the survey provider whether this kind of example actually kind of helps develop an understanding of what the registrant is thinking. But I think really what they're trying to do is give a concrete example, again, a hypothetical of, you know, would you go forward? What would you do here? Because that has a lot to do with decisions for the trademark claims, which is what we're trying to understand. With so many questions about the trademark claims, that, you know, I think we should just present this to the working group as kind of the compromise that we arrived at. Thanks.
Thanks. This is Christine. And I will – oh, I see Susan in the queue also. I just wanted to respond really briefly. I appreciated the effort to take out the brands, which I did note last week what was an objection that I had. Also, I noted last week in the transcript that this was not a hill I was about to die on. The branding was an irritation more than a real problem. My main problem and is really, and I think I, you know, where I can make a comment to this and put it in writing and we can send it to the group so we'd have to, you know, could go on and on about it, but – it's really that we can't know intent. So and I think I just put in the chat, but if we say you can register apple.farm or apple.computer, you know, but if you're presented this notice, what would you do, right? And maybe you say majorcomputercompany.farm, majorcomputercompany.computer. The problem is that someone might, you know, do the right thing and say, of course you can't get Apple Computer. Yes, of course you can't get apple.farm. But even then, you can't, of course, do anything because it all goes down to what you eventually intend to do with that domain name and then what you actually do with it. So ultimately, people can click. They might click the quote-unquote right answer, but we won't actually know if their use or their intended use or what they're thinking is in good faith or bad faith. So that's what I worry about. And I think, as I mentioned last week, I really think we, you and I, could sit and figure this out. But I'm worried that the working group is going to take this to mean, well, people feel scared away, or I don't think it's going to end up in a good place. And Kathy would like to respond to my comment, and then Susan.
I think given that there's no right answer, because you're right, we don't know what's in their head, but wouldn't it be useful to know? I mean, hopefully the survey providers are not going to be trademark people, and they're not going to convey whether they agree or disagree. They're just collecting data, right? So wouldn't it be interesting for us to know what that person would do in a hypothetical? I think it might help answer questions that have been with the working group for a long time. But you're right. We don't want to convey there's a right answer or a wrong answer because there's not. It all depends on context. But it might be very useful for us to know what they would do next. Thanks.
Thank you. Susan, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Hi, it's Susan. I'm pretty much in the same place as you are, Christine. I mean, I'm more comfortable with this now that the brand names are taken out than I was when the brand names were in there, obviously. But I'm still not that comfortable because even when we have the, you know, we have the data, if you like, but it's data which I'm not sure how usable the data is when we have it, because as you've been saying, you know, the guy who on Horse Farm clicks, oh dear, I wouldn't proceed, you know, we don't know what he was planning to do with horse.farm, and so we are in this working group going to draw the inference that people have been scared off when they shouldn't have been because the example was Horse Farm, but we don't know what the guy we were asking had in his mind he was going to do with Horse Farm. I think we will inevitably have people in our working group drawing adverse inferences from the responses using these hypotheticals because we don't know what the underlying intent was. And I do acknowledge that I think Rebecca's done a great job of trying to make this less offensive to individual brand owners by anonymizing it and making it a hypothetical. But I don't think we could go so far as to say that this was the compromise we reached on the last call, because it absolutely wasn't. I mean, we didn't reach agreement on this last time. So, you know, we can't put it to the working group as this is the compromise we came to, because we didn't come to this as a compromise.
Thank you, Susan. Kathy, is that an old hand?
Yeah, it is a whole old hand. Go ahead to Cynthia, and I'll come back. Thanks.
Okay, great. Cynthia, you're next, and then Kathy, and then I actually have a proposal. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. this is Cynthia. So, you know, as I listen to Phil and Kathy and Christine and Susan, what it seems like to me is that we are actually not in agreement of what information we're trying to elicit from the hypothetical. Kathy points out that we could get all kinds of information. More information is better. There are some specific pushback on, you know, what parts of the information may not be knowable or usable. So here's what I'm thinking. I don't mind the hypothetical so long as we are trying to elicit a specific piece of information that is actionable. Information for information's sake would be great if we had unlimited time and money, but we don't. So let's stick to the information that will be actionable, that is directly related to what we have to decide upon. And then if a hypothetical can be asked that is targeted to elicit specific information, I say let's do it. But it needs to be targeted to elicit a specific kind of information that we can then act on, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Kathy.
Okay, Kathy. I think that's the point, actionable information. And that's why I think Rebecca is pushing so hard on this, because it could give us actionable information. Of course, we don't know what the answers will be. But, you know, for anyone who hasn't heard, as one of the co-authors of the trademark claims notice, that clearly is not being understood. Anything that helps us understand how to make it clear and communicate better that that there are reasons to register, that there are reasons to not register. This is about shedding light on the notice to make it more understandable. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Christine for the transcript. So we are not a consensus on this, and we do need to wrap this up as soon as possible. I think we have agreement on everything else in this section so far. I'm going to suggest that we leave this suggestion here, the considering offering medical. What I would like to see, and see if there's a volunteer for, is someone to do what Cynthia suggested, someone who advocates for the hypothetical, and maybe that's Kathy or Rebecca, and I'm not even sure if Kathy advocates for it or she's just sort of helping Rebecca in her absence. But if someone is willing to make a short summary of a few sentences of what they hope to get from the hypothetical, what the purpose is, I would be willing to write a few sentences, and perhaps Susan would help me explaining why we don't think a hypothetical is useful in this situation, sort of a point-counterpoint, not a long thing, so that when we send this whole thing to the working group for their review, the working group can decide which way to go, and they'll have a really short, concise summary of an advocate's why we should include it versus not. And Kathy is volunteering Rebecca for that, which I think it sounds right because this is her idea and she has the best arguments. And I personally am volunteering myself, and anyone who wants to help me, that's fine. And then we can do that. Does anybody disagree with that solution? We are such a small group that I don't know how else to resolve it. And Kathy thinks it's a good solution. And Susan says yes and that she could help. Cynthia likes it. Okay, good. And we can circulate our you know, kind of position statements to anyone else to kind of help tweak too. So that's fine. Let's plan to do that by next week, I think. I think that'll help staff because I know we need to get a jump on in this doc and I think was technically supposed to be done by tomorrow. So good. Let's scroll down. I think that might be the end of Rebecca's section. And we only have 15 minutes left. I don't know, maybe Julie, what I know there was more action items. We wanted to talk about ICANN meeting and future meetings. So maybe now is a good time. Maybe we can spend the last 15 minutes conducting group business. Julie, go ahead.
Thanks so much, Christine, and thanks again for chairing for this section today. That was extremely helpful, and hopefully we've caught all the actions in the notes here, which we'll send out not too long after this meeting. Thanks again. So the other item on the agenda is timing of future meetings and ICANN 61. And just to go back to remind you of the email that Ariel sent, first, we note that staff notes that there's one more task for the sub-team to do, and that's to examine potential data needs in relation to preliminary agreed questions for examining additional marketplace RPMs currently being offered on a voluntary basis by some registry operators. And so the sub-team is going to need to determine the timing to commence the discussion. Now, I realize we have people missing today, so we may not be able to answer the question on timing today, but we can at least perhaps get some thoughts. Some options that staff suggests are to start the discussion on Friday, March 2nd, 2 weeks from today, and that would be the last opportunity for a sub-team meeting before ICANN 61, or to hold a meeting during ICANN 61, or to start the discussion after ICANN 61. And if the sub-team would like to meet at ICANN 61, then staff could assist with logistics. For instance, would this group want to use one of the four slots that are already set aside for the RPM sessions? Or alternatively, this group could meet as a small group and staff could get what we call a pop-up room for that. That is a room that doesn't appear on the main schedule, but that we can request for informal meetings. That would mean, though, if we had a pop-up room, that we would not have remote participation and sort of all the bells and whistles that we'd normally have in one of the main rooms. So there are just some thoughts for you, and happy to open it up to get discussion going. Thanks. And Christine, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Christine for the transcript. I had one question. I think I saw this, but maybe I missed this. Julie, are we trying to sort of get this done fast enough that we can append it to the survey? I know because we're going to want to ask, sort of everybody that we're already surveying about this sort of mandatory versus optional sunrises and the DPML or the Merck's protected lists. I think we're going to want to ask more of that. So would we want to add that in to the survey, or are we going to try to come back? Thanks.
Thank you very much. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So let me see if I got we don't think it's part of the survey, no. For the survey, we're going to try to close that out by 23:59 UTC on Friday, February 23rd, and then produce a clean version. So what we have here, so whatever we decide is this last version after the meeting on the 23rd, and incorporate in the input and comments as is, and then we'll be circulating it to the full working group and then forwarding it to the procurement team. So does that answer your question? Because I'm not sure if I quite understood what you were asking.
No, it did, but if we think about, if you work backwards from the question that says, we need to get data about DPM or about, I don't know, I forget, I say it wrong, but we're really talking about the private mechanisms, right? We're going to have to from the same sources. So the best way to do that, I think, is a survey. So then are we going to induce some survey fatigue? I think you answered the question. No, the plan is not to wait. The plan is to proceed and resolve the problem that arises from having to do another survey when that problem comes up. Is that my understanding?
Thank you, Christine. And actually, staff is having a little internal discussion about your question, and whether or not that, the additional marketplaces should form part of this survey. I mean, the timing obviously would be, if we want to get information to, as to the survey providers, in particular those who have have responded to the RFP, if we want to get more guidance to them, then we'd need to close this particular survey and do that as we had originally planned. So we're actually just discussing amongst ourselves whether or not there would need to be a survey also for the additional marketplace RPMs. And while we're doing that, I see Ariel has her hand up. Please go ahead, Ariel.
Thanks, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. So just to give you a little understanding of the RFP timeline, we are going to close the deadline March 9th, and that's when we're going to review all the proposals. But then we will still have a month or more to do the evaluation and contract with the survey provider, so we don't foresee the project get kicked off until mid-May or so. So if the team wants to work on the additional marketplace RPMs, you can definitely do that. And then when we have get the vendor contracted, then they can come back and discuss with the sub-team about, you know, how to design and develop the survey, whether to incorporate additional questions to address that type of RPM. So I think, you know, we can just try to finish this data table by the end of next week, and then we can provide that update to the responding vendors. And when the vendor is contracted, if there's additional information we want to provide, we will have opportunities to discuss with them how to design a survey. I hope that provides some information.
Thank you very much, Ariel. And Susan has had her hand up for quite a while. Go ahead, Susan.
That's absolutely fine. Hi, it's Susan. I mean, part of the reason I had my hand up was to ask the question that Christine asked, so I was quite happy to sit and wait for that discussion to happen. But I think maybe what we want to try and do is kind of, if we can, knock the marketplace RPMs on the head as quickly as we can, because we might, in the course of doing that work, find one or two questions that we could, you know, sensibly slip into the survey, which, you know, don't sort of massively expand its scope, but kind of are, you know, are a sort of useful and sensible addition to what's already being envisaged. And then I just saw Christine's suggestion that we have a big work session in Puerto Rico and hammer it out, which seems to me to be a good one. I'd be willing to try and do that. My ideal would be to have a kind of breakout room where we could do it. However, I do recognize that that's probably not the best way to work if that means that we can't have Adobe Connect for anyone who hasn't actually made the physical journey and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't be averse to using one of the sessions because there are about four or something that are already scheduled, but I would really, really like to ask that the room is set up in such a way that we can make it a working session and that it's made extremely clear to everyone in the work group that unless they want to come along and join this small working team and do this exercise, they shouldn't be coming. Because what we did in Abu Dhabi was we had a really awkward and difficult session where the sub-team thought we were going to be sitting and you know, working around the table trying to do the work, and a whole room full of people were sitting staring at us, expecting us to make some presentation on our findings. And we don't want to have that again. That was a very uncomfortable, awkward, and somewhat wasted session. We did the best we could in the circumstances, but we just needed a small table with, you know, with eight of us sitting around and working on it. And I don't mind if other people come, if they want to do the work, but we don't want, you know, to be a theatrical performance for a lot of people.
Thank you very much, Susan. I've got some folks typing in the room. And Christine says, when I say big work session, I mean us as a breakout for as long as possible, not a full working group. Christine agrees with Susan. Phil notes that RPM working group has six hours of session time in San Juan. So Phil says using 90 minutes to wrap this could be done. Co-chairs can discuss further on a regular planning call. And Kathy, I have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Kathy. I worry a little bit about jumping with the full working group from URF data back to trademark clearinghouse-related mechanisms data. I wonder how that would go. I think people, you know, have kind of moved on. We're still with the Sunrise and trademark claims issues, and I think a lot of the working group has moved on, as we asked them to do. So I'm kind of in the camp of thinking that a smaller breakout session, but one that definitely had Adobe Connect or teleconference capabilities that we could bring in members of this sub-team who are not able to go to Puerto Rico, I think that would be great. On the other hand, I note that ICANN61 is already very, very crowded. So finding a space where most of us could attend is going to be its own challenge. Thank you.
And Christine, I see you have your hand up. This is Julie Hadlin from staff. Just to note, so we would have, if we wanted remote participation, we would have to use one of the existing slots, one of the working group slots. So, and as Phil noted, we do have 6 hours. We have quite, you know, 4 different sessions scheduled. So we do have, you know, if the co-chairs agree, time available for one of those sessions to go to the sub-team. And then we would definitely have remote participation. If we were to schedule this as a separate session, it would then be in a pop-up room, and it would not have any remote participation, just to be clear on that. And please go ahead, Christine.
Thank you, Christine, for the record. Yeah, I think it happens a lot. I was going to say what Susan said, but I'm thinking about the people on the call today. Who all knows that they would need to have remote participation? Is there any oddball chance that we were all going? I don't know about the people who are not able to make it. If we're all able to make it, then maybe the small room would be perfect. I very much have the same sentiments of it is not going to work. It is going to be awful if we try to pull anyone from the working group who wants to come in. I mean, we have a separate call. We have a separate membership list for this sub-team. And, you know, if someone wants to join this sub-team, they can, but they need to formally join it. And I think it should be the same for this breakout. You know, if you're going to show up, you need to formally join and commit to participating because we are an active group of participants who are very deep into this. So that's my concern. Phil, go ahead.
Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, thanks. I think the co-chairs need to huddle with staff, and we've got a planning call at 2 today, so maybe we can, 2 Eastern, maybe we can raise it then, but see kind of what was being planned for the 6 hours we have and whether we could use one of this. I'm just concerned that if we try to add this on top of 6 hours already scheduled, that's a lot of RPM for one meeting, and it's since people have different responsibilities at other times, trying to find a time slot where all the members of this working group could be there and not have conflicts with their other commitments could be difficult, whereas people should be able to on this overall working group should be able to make the RPM sessions if they were scheduled correctly. I haven't seen a San Juan schedule yet. So, you know, this co-chair has taken it all under advisement, but I think if we can complete the task in San Juan with a dedicated session, that would be a useful exploitation of one of those 90-minute slots.
Thank you so much, Phil. This is Julie Hedlund again from staff, and we are at the top of the hour, so I do want to let us all adjourn on time, but we will continue the discussion, as Phil notes, with the co-chairs and staff, and let you know the results of that. So thank you, everyone. I hope you have a great day and a nice weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Yes, and thanks again, Christine, for leading today. Great job. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you
can go ahead and stop the like.
Absolutely. Thanks, Julie. Meeting has been adjourned and recordings have been stopped. Great day.